Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Show. Coming up, Colt Ya Rocket plans to introduce a new Colt Conference League, gets a burn from Aberdeen, the pain and the pleasure of the playoffs, who's going up, who's going down, and it's Helicopter Sunday in the Scottish Women's Professional League as the season goes right to the wire. Welcome one and all, you wonderful followers of Scottish football. I am your guide once more through this current playhouse of playoffs. B-team bias, or bullshit, depending on your views. Joining us this week, football filmmaker and editor extraordinaire, Finlay Marks. Hello, Finlay.
Hey, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine. You all right?
Yeah, very good.
And yes, Laura is on our holly bags this week, so it should be a painless, smooth show with insightful debate, balanced passion and understanding. As host of Hampton Roar podcast, football author and commentator Andy Barge joins us. Probably the best three-piece since Blink 182, Andy. Welcome.
Well, hopefully an adequate stand-in here.
I think it's a pretty good stand-in, if you ask me. Might not have Laura back ever again after today.
I'm not wanting to cause a ruckus here, guys.
Laura normally does that, mate. You're fine. Don't you worry. Let's get stuck into some football funnies from the weekend. Finn, do you have anything for us?
I think it's the third or fourth time in recent weeks that we're going to a match that involves Queen's Park and something that was spotted in the crowd. This time it was Neil Lennon in the crowds with his massive aviators. You'd think after, you know, a season or so in Cyprus, he'd have figured out how to wear them properly. But yeah, that was an interesting look. The fallout from that game, obviously, we'll get into the actual football later on. But, you know, the news that Owen Coyle's actually now left Queen's Park. It was interesting that Neil Lennon was spotted in the crowd. I think people will try and make connections. Obviously, there's a bit of history there. The chief exec at Queen's Park is Leanne Dempster. And I know there was a kind of interesting end to his time at Hibs where Leanne Dempster was the chief exec there when he kind of unsacrimoniously left.
Hibs. He's not going to Queen's. He's not going to Queen's Park, is he? Surely
Stranger
not.
Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, you never know. Sticking with the Championship, though, and probably a little bit out of date by the time people are listening to this, but the fact that obviously Dundee won the Championship and the SPFL announced the then Dundee manager Gary Bowyer as Championship Manager of the Year, then 45 minutes later Dundee announced that he's left the club. I mean, can Dundee fans catch a break at any point? Are they allowed to be happy or not? Like, I feel so bad for them, but I don't know, maybe it's the best thing for them.
It's just so perfectly cinch, isn't it? It's just because it was retweeted by Dundee, wasn't it? It was like they retweeted congratulations to Gary Bowyer from the even SPFL better account, and then announced less than an hour later that he was leaving the club. So just wonderful.
From what I remember, I don't think that would have been something that would have caused too much disarray among the Dundee fans in the first half of the season. And then
you're right.
Yeah, he's managed to get the job get the aim over the line, and a one season wonder.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that first half of the season, there was a lot of people thinking Dundee should have squished it. Still got the job done, like you say, but yeah, you never know. It could end up being a good thing. So we'll move on to some news. Obviously, the PFA awards were at the weekend. Unsurprisingly, Celtic mopped up. But what do you think about Jota getting the goal of the season award? Are you guys all for this?
It wasn't even the best Old Firm goal of the season. The ball through is what does it. I mean, it's a beautiful goal.
Oh, I don't know. I think the finish is still pretty damn good as well. Like a chip.
I agree. No, the finish is great, but I think that was the game that John McLaughlin basically forgot how to play football, wasn't it? He kind of just comes out, half stays in his line, doesn't really do anything. So the finish, he's got the whole goal to aim at, but it requires the finish, and it's a great finish. But I think, like, when Humphrey scored from his own half, how's that been overlooked?
Yeah.
This has been voted for by fans, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, okay, we have reached the crux of the situation with that, when it's quite frankly farcical that they would allow it to be voted for by fans when you look at how disproportionate that is in Scotland. I mean, the one that I don't even think was on the list was Duke's back heel against Dundee United in March, where he cut in from the left-hand side, and as he was twisting away from goal, he back heeled it into the near post. That, if you're looking for a piece of skill, anyway, yes, Jota's clip was really nice, but that was sensational. And also, I think it probably came just a bit too late in the season. Van Veen's first touch against Kelly last week to bring Kelly's long ball down. I'd say as moments of isolated skill, they outweigh Jota's finish, for sure.
I guess it goes into that debate again, doesn't it? Like, what constitutes the perfect goal? Is it, like, not necessarily the best finish, but a flowing team move? Or is it a moment of total individual brilliance? If she were here, Laura would be screaming that free kicks shouldn't even be included on the list, because she doesn't think they're any more impressive than a penalty, which is just silly. But should set pieces be included on there? Well, I also think you need to factor in things like magnitude and importance. I do think those go a long way to mattering in a goal as well. But it's exactly as you say, Andy. It's such a shame, because it's just basically a popularity contest.
Yeah.
So it's always going to go to, if they're letting fans vote, it will go to one of the two clubs with the biggest fan bases of whoever nudges it over the line. Yeah, it's just such a shame, because there have been so many great goals. And like you were saying, even the shortlist, like, there were so many great goals left off. There's pretty much every goal Leighton Clarkson scored this season was a worldie, and I don't even know if any of them were included on the shortlist. So
Kyogo scored a screamer against Dundee United, I remember, at the start of the season. Was that maybe the 9-0 game? That was,
yeah, I think you're right.
Where he first time curled it into the top corner from between 20 and 25 yards. So even if Celtic fans were going to vote for one, I would argue that as one of Celtic's goals is better than the one that Jota scored against Rangers.
Also as well, something you said is a total bugbear of mine as well. I get why they do it. We've talked about this before, the Player of the Year awards obviously happening before the season finishes, which, you know, by and large, I don't think there's not going to be anybody that's awarded an individual player award on the basis of probably the last two or three games of the season. So probably fine to hand those out. But what if you get, you know, the greatest goal that Scottish football's ever seen on the final day of the season? Like, that's just going to be consigned to the ether. And like you say, because the Van Veen goal, I think, should have been on the shortlist as well. The first touch is magnificent.
Yeah,
absolutely so magnificent. And the finish is great too. So it irks me.
on that note, Finn, it's probably more annoying that the manager of the season is decided before everything ends. Because I think you're probably right that the player of the season has made his mark over 34 of the 38 games, or however long it is since the nominations come out.
Yeah.
But what if, for example, St Mirren won 4 of their 5 games in the split and finished third? There's only one winner for manager of the season at that point.
Exactly.
Isn't there? And it would be Stephen Robinson. Because if you compare,
totally agree,
if you compare relatively St Mirren's hypothetical season there to Celtic's or Rangers, whoever's won the league, then St Mirren's is a more impressive one. We saw it with Clark when he was in his last season at Killie. He won manager of the season. And I think for that sort of situation, it's probably a bit hasty to award it, no matter how good Celtic or Rangers manager has had.
Given that even still with Robinson taking St Mirren to their highest finish in a league since the 80s, is still an amazing achievement. And you have to compare the budgets. Celtic and Rangers, fair enough, they should mop up, but there should be an element of understanding and looking at the other budgets and then weighing that up against the achievements. That would be the fair assumption. But just rounding off the other awards, obviously Kyogo Furuhashi picked up Player of the Year award. Malik Tillman got Young Player of the Year award.
Yeah, which is, well, I think even Rangers fans, the reaction on Twitter was just like, really? Malik? I mean, he's had a good season, but it's not been unplayable. He's not, the Kyogo one I find slightly surprising as well, but it's voted by fellow players, that award, isn't it? So
you can kind of
understand if every player in the league's just been like, oh gosh, yeah, I can't contain him, he's been too good. So, like, you can understand them voting for that. I mean, I agree with you. It's just, it's a bit boring and obvious, I think, as well. Like, it is. I think Stephen Robinson, or you know, looking down the divisions, I think James McPake as well is another good shout for manager of the year with the job that he's done at Dunfermline. Because again, you want to take context into these things. It shouldn't just be, or who won the league in the top division. I don't think it's just as simple as that.
Well, we'll come on to it again in the playoff chat, but if Rhys McCabe takes Airdrie up, that's massive.
Totally agree.
So I just think especially the manager's one, and I understand why it all has to be done at the same time, but the manager's vote is far too premature. And on the young player vote, I'm totally with you that it just all seemed a bit underwhelming. Even looking at Leigh Labada, he's not really made many starts for Celtic in the second half of the season.
He was in the shortlist.
Exactly.
Matt O'Reilly's been a decent player for Celtic. Tillman's been a decent player. Can't comment on Charlie Riley from Rovers. I haven't seen a second of him, but there seems to be quite a lot of positive noise. I think probably it came too early for Johnston at Motherwell. I think if he'd maybe broken into the Motherwell team back in September or October rather than being on loan at Cove, I think he probably would have been in with a shout of being on the shortlist. And also, I think that what's the cutoff for the young player of the year? Because when it came out, I was astonished Duke wasn't on it, but he turned 23 at the start of this year, so that must rule him out. Otherwise, there's no explanation.
Yeah, I think so.
Otherwise, there's no explanation for him not being on the list.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned Charlie Riley. He did actually pick up the League Two Player of the Year award, and then working just backwards, Callum Gallagher from Edrione in League One, and then Depo Akinyemi. We spoke about it last week, Finn, quite rightly. He got the Championship Player of the Year award. But elsewhere as well, there was a good anniversary for Dundee United fans. It was 40 years since Dundee United won the league under Jim McLean.
No, it's an incredible achievement. And, you know, the more time passes, you just wonder, will there ever be a non-Old Firm winner of the league again? Probably not for a little while, and unless something drastic happens or changes. You look back, I think, in the kind of special shows that we've done around Scottish teams in Europe, the episode that we did with Richard Gordon, I asked him a question at the end, which was about if he thinks that Scottish teams should have won more European trophies. And he gives a really interesting answer. You should listen to the show. It's a really good chat we had with Richard Gordon. He was great. But he mentions Dundee United and saying they were probably the most unlucky of the teams. You know, obviously they lost the UEFA Cup final in 1987, I think it was, and had got to the semi-finals of the European Cup either the year before or a few years before, and kind of went out in fairly dark circumstances in the semi-finals to Roma, where a lot of like interesting things happening off the pitch and a lot of shithousery on the pitch, which contrived to see them lose that semi-final. And if they got to the final, Richard Gordon thinks they could have, you know, potentially beaten Liverpool. So the figure of Jim McLean, he loomed large over Scottish football for so long. He's a legendary figure. The team as well, like even now, I never saw that team in the flesh, but you still know all the names, McAlpine and Malpass and Sturrock and all of these great players that were in that side. So yeah, it's great to look back on, but you hope it's something that is not going to be decades away in being repeated, but I'm not too sure.
You think I'm going to answer a stupid question like that?
Okay, in a few weeks' time, every SFA member club in Scotland will vote on whether to create a new fifth-tier league, which will comprise of several B teams and a selection of Highland and Lowland league clubs as well. If it comes into force, which will be just under League Two, so it'll become a new fifth tier, it'll ultimately relegate most Highland and Lowland League teams down a division to accommodate this new league. We're going to cover this a lot more detail closer to the time of the actual vote. But on Monday, the first Premiership club came out about the plans, and it was Aberdeen. They confirmed they will not accept the offer to submit a B-side into this proposed league, saying it would cost them around £400,000 to fund. And the first thing, really, for me, is that's quite a lot of money. I didn't know how much teams were going to have to put or stump up for this, and, you know, that's quite surprising.
Yeah, but I'm also surprised at the amount of money that it would cost. I suppose that, from what Alan Burrows is saying, that would be because of the increased personnel that the club would require to be able to submit a team and also run the players back at Pittodrie or Cormac Park as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. But it's one of those things where I see that, you know, doing a bit of research of this league's going to be separate of the SPFL organisation, so they can actually exploit potential commercial rights of this, you know, maybe sell it to, I don't know, but they can make some money out of this, which could then in turn p- potentially fund it as well. But there's a real kind of rancor towards this whole idea of facilitating. I mean, cult teams is a phrase that came up about trying to pander to Celtic and Rangers B teams, right? So this idea of pandering to the bigger teams at the top of the Scottish Premiership doesn't sit well with a lot of teams, especially a lot of teams who have done well recently, like likes of Darvel, who absolutely smashed Aberdeen. Smashed is a bit of a big term, but you know what I mean. The teams that are standing out and are being well supported by their local communities. And you look at this whole system, the pyramid system that's came in has been a total success story. And now that we see that we're starting to change it, do you feel like this animosity towards it, Finn, will not go away after it is introduced, or if it doesn't get introduced?
No, I don't think it will go away. The conversation will still be there, and quite rightly, because I think it feels like such a vanity project on the side of the Old Firm, because I know the reasoning behind it. I do understand it. I think Rangers and Celtic both felt that with the Reserve League, there was no real point to, you know, having the biggest and best academies in the country smashing teams every week. It's like, what's the, playing against boys of their own age, what's the point? What are they going to learn from that? They wanted to test them in more difficult environments against men's teams on the proviso that the players would be more first team ready. And you know, they try and sell it as a, well, we're actually helping everybody because we're creating future Scotland internationals, which, I mean, the pathways in both Celtic and Rangers first team, not that it's impossible, and we have seen some really successful examples of youth team players breaking through in recent seasons and becoming mainstays in the Scotland national team. Nathan Patterson, obviously a bit further back, Callum McGregor and James Forrest. But in real terms, how many of these young players are going to make it through consistently and be mainstays of the first team? And all they're really doing now by expanding out, I mean, there was a lot of animosity between Rangers and Celtic and in Hearts this season, having B teams in the Lowland League. But if you're expanding it out across the country, all you're doing is creating a quasi-reserve league, but filling up the spaces in between League Two and the lower leagues down the pyramid. It's just it's so excruciatingly unfair. And like you're saying, there are so many ambitious clubs now that we've got this pathway, even though it is difficult for ambitious clubs in the Highland League, in the Lone League, to enter the league system. We're putting an extra hurdle in there. And then a league system as a whole that's already, I think personally, got too many clubs. It's too saturated for the size of country that we are. We're adding another league in and squishing it full with more teams. It just, the mind boggles. Mm.
Does it come down to whether you think that these young players are going to benefit Scottish football or the Scottish national team in the long term? And is that worth diluting the lower Scottish leagues for? Is that really the balance? And also, is there any proof that this would help the Scottish national team rather than the loan system?
Well, that's a good point, actually. Where is the proof this is going to make things better? Obviously, there will be certain clubs that turn around and say that, you know, contrary to what Finn is saying, that this will give younger players a better opportunity to get into the first team, having regular competitive football. But it's hard to believe, really, because Finn was right by saying himself as well, it's just another reserve league, but you're doing it by smashing into the middle of the whole pyramid system, and that seems completely and utterly unfair. So there has to be an incentive to those clubs also to make this all work.
Celtic and Rangers aren't really too encouraging, I think, with our youngsters at the moment anyway, with the amount of first team action they get. I mean, Rob, I know that Alan McGregor's been great for Rangers, but McCrory's just starting to get a game now. I think he's only played four or five times. Lowry seems to be a prospect who's kind of stagnated, maybe. I don't know if that's too harsh this season. He hasn't really featured all that much. Leon King's out the team now with John Souttar fit again. It was even long before that he was out the team. Celtic, Welsh can't get in the team because of the centre-back options. Vata is appearing from the bench now and again. I'm not sure that just because a Celtic or Rangers youngster is playing in the Lowland League, as they have been, and well, by the way, Rangers and Celtic were second and third in the Lowland League, so they clearly have got a bit about them, but I don't think it's going to propel them into the first team. And I just, when we were talking about it there, I've googled Scotland's Euro 2020 squad. There are a real host of players that have either played for teams permanently or on loan in the Scottish lower leagues. None more famous than Andy Robertson, who enjoyed time at Queen's Park before moving on to United. McGinn played in it with Hibs. Lyndon Dykes with Queens.
Well, Lauren Shanklin was down at Queen's Park as well.
Yeah, Shanks was down there. Scott McKenna and Kevin Nisbet played for United on loan in the same season. Does that not prove a bit more that the loan system, when it's used well and the teams pick the right players and vice versa, that there's more fruitful consequence?
I think that was actually something I was going to pick up on that you mentioned just previously, Andy, as well, because it was something Aberdeen specifically mentioned in their statement, which was this notion of having better strategic partnerships between top division clubs and lower league clubs, and building out those partnerships so that there is a more consistent connection between those players that go out on loan and their parent club. Maybe they can match up with teams where they have a similar style of play, even simple things like in terms of geography. I know that one of the big stumbling blocks for Aberdeen was the cost that it would incur to, you know, bus youngsters up and down and travel and accommodation and all that kind of thing if they're travelling down to play teams. Well, if they have a strategic partnership with clubs that are closer to them geographically, even the likes of, you know, like Cali Thistle, or going further down like Brechin or Elgin City or something like that, those are the circumstances where they would have the grounds to develop those strategic partnerships and have players going to those clubs.
There are most teams, probably in the Premiership anyway, and they might not even be there for much longer, but County are probably the most isolated ones, unless they wanted to strike up a partnership with Cali Thistle. So look, Aberdeen, they sent Ryan Duncan on loan to Peterhead last season, and he was good there, and I've done some work for Aberdeen, and I was always curious as to why he wasn't being given a proper chance by Jim Goodwin. And Barry Robson, who's worked with him a lot at youth level, as soon as he's come in as the interim, has put Ryan Duncan in the team, and he's doing well in midfield. He's a tall boy, strong, fast. He's like a powerful player that looks beyond his years. And I think, there you go, last season was playing for Peterhead and has spent a season playing against seasoned roughhousers and has been able to then come in and play for Barry Robson's rejuvenated Aberdeen side. I don't think that you could probably make the same argument that he'd be as ready to do that playing alongside his teammates all the time, potentially against lower or lesser opposition, which the Lowland League, I think, is fair to say, is, rather than Leagues 1 or 2, even though a lot of teams are probably around a similar level.
Do you also think, just to end on, the fact that this whole story came out of the blue, it's been bubbling away for a long time, but it came out of the blue in March, and the vote is coming up this summer. So it's kind of like a bang, here you go, we've got everything ready, this is what the plans are. And it's like, well, who's been consulted? Fans haven't been consulted. There's no, right, where's the, like we said earlier, where's the proof that young players are going to benefit from this new league? That idea of it just coming out of the blue, it ignores the want of Scottish football fans, doesn't it?
Yeah. What's new?
Yeah, well put.
We were discussing this just the other week, the playoff match between Spartans and Brechin. There were 2,000 fans at Clyde Park. I think I'd said it back then, the game's in rude health. Like, it doesn't need the helping hand. There are brilliant clubs at that level with strong supporter bases, and their league shouldn't be being diluted with children's teams. It's just that simple.
Children's teams.
The dogs bark and the caravan passes. The caravan keeps moving. The caravan keeps going.
So much has kind of been decided around the country in terms of league champions, but there is the league where there's still something to play for in the final day. Yes, the Scottish Women's Professional Football League is going to reach a massive conclusion this weekend, and three teams can still win the title. Two of them are even playing each other on the final day. It's going to be amazing, this, Finn. We've been desperate to try and get some women's football reaction on this podcast for a while, but, you know, this seems to be like the absolute perfect time for it.
It's been an amazing end to this season. I mean, people will look at it and you know, be able to tell very quickly that the three teams that are vying for the title going into the final day are the three professional teams in the league. Rangers and Celtic's women's teams made the announcement that they would turn professional, I think it was 3 years ago, and Glasgow City were very close behind them as well, which it's actually really impressive. You know, Glasgow City have been able to start from nothing really and get to that point of being self-sustaining in a professional football club. It's really impressive, especially when they don't have the might of two very successful men's teams to kind of piggyback off the back of. I did a film with FIFA a couple of years ago about the story of Glasgow City, and it's an incredible story, the way that that club was founded. And obviously they've been the dominating team for so long. They won 14 titles in a row. Rangers managed to arrest that run last season and are the current champions. They currently sit in second place, but the final day of the season is going to be incredible. So Rangers host Glasgow City. It's pretty much a winner-takes-all match, although there's still the possibility that Celtic could clinch the title as well. Mm-hmm. They're playing Hearts. Both games are live on the BBC. The Rangers City games on BBC Alba, and the Celtic Hearts games on the BBC Scotland channel. So what's amazing is you can see even in the last couple of years since those teams have gone professional, even again the step up in quality has been amazing. Like, you're getting some brilliant matches, some brilliant football being played at that level, and the crowds are very healthy as well. I think there's a growing interest, and it's also something I think at a national team level that's started to capture the imagination as well. You know, we've seen the crowds at Hampden for the women's games going up and up as well, and I think there's a real groundswell of interest mm-hmm. in the women's game in Scotland, which is fantastic to see at all levels, which is growing. So yeah, it's brilliant, and it's such a brilliant advert for our game in general to have these kind of stories, this kind of drama going on the pitch. It's brilliant.
So obviously Glasgow are top of the table at the moment, 2 points ahead of both Rangers and Celtic. Rangers in second on goal difference. The goal difference is utterly wild, by the way, if you do look at the league table. But the exposure this season has brought has been excellent, with Sky Sports televising some games as well. Andy, you've commentated on quite a few women's games this season. How do you look at this as a product?
Improving. I think that's important to note. I think there are still a few things that needs improved on in SWPL1. I think the split was a positive move, because we can't really avoid this. If City, Rangers and Celtic were all playing teams below them in the table rather than two of them playing each other, then this would probably be a foregone conclusion.
Yeah,
City have lost 3 games this season, and they've only been against Celtic and Rangers. They've dropped 4 other points, so they've drawn 2 other games. These teams don't really tend to lose or drop points against other sides apart from mm-hmm. each other. So having this split introduced makes it more interesting and allows more points to be gained and dropped against each other when yeah. the season's reaching its crunch. And that's why it's so close and so exciting at the moment, because City were in control of this campaign, and then they lost to Celtic and Rangers. I think it might have been back-to-back weeks, if not back-to-back weeks, over the course of 2 or 3 weeks. And all of a sudden, they had to win at the weekend to make sure they went back above them. And they only managed that in the 86th minute. They scored a late winner against Thistle. So it's been getting good exposure through the BBC. The Sky deal is encouraging as well. I think Sky have shown 5 or 6 matches now, including an Edinburgh derby as well. So it's not just Celtic, Rangers and City that have had all the exposure. The live game on the BBC Scotland channel this weekend, there's always one on Alba every Sunday, and Sky will get more involved into next season. So I think the exposure and the interest is growing. There's nearly 10,000, I think, at Celtic Park for the game against Glasgow City last week. So, yeah, it's trending in the right direction for sure. For what it's worth, I think that Celtic will win the league.
Really?
Yeah.
That is a bold, bold statement. You're going in. You think it'll be a draw between Rangers and Glasgow?
Not necessarily. I'm commentating on the Rangers-City game. The goal difference between Rangers and Celtic is 1.
Yeah.
I don't think City will beat Rangers. So if it's a draw and Celtic beat Hearts, Celtic have won the league on goal difference, because their goal difference is 9 better than Glasgow City. If Rangers win and Celtic win, they'll finish on the same points, but Celtic should beat Hearts much more comfortably than Rangers should beat City. I can't imagine Rangers going and beating Glasgow City 3-4-0, but I can see Celtic doing that to Hearts and therefore overturning the 1 goal advantage that Rangers currently have on them. So I'm not sure that City will beat Rangers, which opens the whole thing up. I think Celtic will beat Hearts comfortably. I think Hearts have only got 1 win in the split fixtures, and I don't think they'll cause Celtic too much trouble. City Rangers is exciting. City, I think City, they have to win. They're not going to win it with a draw because Celtic will see Hearts off.
I noticed that the Rangers-City game is at Ibrox as well, which I think, seeing obviously City played Celtic at Celtic Park, those things are always great. You see it down in England with the teams being able to play it kind of like their main ground. But I suppose with it being a final day, it would be quite good if Celtic Hearts was at Celtic Park, because if they had to shift the trophy quickly over to Celtic Park, that would be a lot better than trying to get it up to is it Airdrie's ground, Excelsior Stadium, is it?
Well, depending on when one is listening to this podcast, there may be some more light shed on that. Just leave it at that just now.
Callum McGregor, and Sakala has pounced on that mess from Celtic. He's closing in. Fashion Sakala! Well, they will say it doesn't really matter, but it does really matter. It always matters on Derby Day in Glasgow, and Rangers have certainly turned up for this one.
Right, let's round up what happened at the top of the SPFL. Obviously, a big win for Rangers, 3-0 winners at Ibrox against the champion Celtic. But Finn, I'll come straight to you, because being a Rangers fan, Rangers fans would have enjoyed it. Celtic fans probably don't really care, although they would have cared slightly and they would have loved to have won. But is this vindication for Michael Beale, if anything?
I don't know about vindication. I think it was much more important, this game, obviously, for Rangers than it was for Celtic. I don't think anyone's deluding themselves, though. In the grand context, obviously, the result doesn't really do anything. It doesn't affect this season in any way. It shortens Celtic's lead at the top marginally, but it's, yeah, I don't think anyone's under any illusions at that. But at the same time, I think when you look at this, it's like, oh, people are saying that the game doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't. It doesn't. In terms of points and stuff like that, it's an irrelevance to the season. And I don't think Rangers fans are getting too carried away with it. But what I would say is that you know, that there is no such thing as a totally meaningless Old Firm game. Even going into this, I think Celtic would have wanted to get something out of it. It was so much more important for Rangers, because the longer you go as a manager of Rangers or Celtic without beating the other side, the more the pressure mounts. So you want to get that monkey off your back as quickly as possible. And, you know, he almost did it in his fifth game back in January in charge, and was a couple of minutes away from doing it. And I think because Rangers have been so toothless in the games where it really did matter, the League Cup final, and I think the game at Celtic Park as well, they just didn't have enough. They kept making silly mistakes. It kind of felt like a bit of a role reversal. I think the scoreline and the manner of the performance, like, Rangers were by far the better team. We'll give them some momentum going into next season, some hope, I think, as well. The players that, not just Michael Beale, but Giovanni Van Bronckhorst and Steven Gerrard have stuck with over so many years, are kind of just, you know, slowly just dropping out the team. So there was no Morelos, there was Kent's still not back from his injury yet. But the players that were in there looked like they really wanted it.
There is an obvious tell, though, when Ange Postecoglou doesn't put Kyogo Furuhashi in the starting lineup. There's an element of the manager almost saying to some of his maybe bit part stars that, you know, go and show me what you've got, Andy.
I'm totally with you, Finn, that there's no such thing as a meaningless Old Firm game. I think Postecoglou has used this as an opportunity to test some of the fringe players to see what their bones are made of. Granted, Ralston and Kobayashi were in the team because of injuries, so maybe if Carter Vickers and Johnston were fit, they wouldn't have played. But have a look at Celtic's bench. Kyogo Furuhashi was on it, Maeda was on it, Greg Taylor. These are starters for Celtic, and if they're fit but not playing, look, this is not a home game against Killy. This is an Old Firm game at Ibrox, and the league's top scorer, the league's player of the season, is on the bench for it. The only conclusion I can arrive at is that Postecoglou wanted to give or Bernabe the opportunity, and Abada on the right hand side as well, who has been good in Old Firm games, let's face it, but hasn't been a starter of late, wanted to give them the opportunity to prove that they are worthy of a place in the starting 11. And, well, quite clearly they didn't take it, because Rangers battered them.
You obviously get this kind of like banter between the fans, and a lot of Celtic fans were just like, oh, it was the B team, wasn't it, going out. And while, you know, obviously like not playing Kyogo, not playing Maida and those types of players, and giving a chance to some other players.
The midfield thing was still Hitati, McGregor, O'Reilly. That's the first three.
Yeah, exactly. But there's more than enough talent. And I think when you know, these players, Kobe, when people say B team, they're referring to Kobayashi, Bernabe, Ralston, O and Abada. These are all still full internationals, and the combined cost was around about, what, £12 million, which is probably the cost of the whole Rangers starting lineup. So I think, you know, you've got to take that with a pinch of salt as well. When people say B team players, I think that's doing it down a little. When you call a spade, in the games that it really mattered in this season, Celtic were the ones that turned up. Celtic were the ones that took advantage of mistakes. Celtic were the ones that won those small battles and those fine margins. But I think it'll have disappointed Postecoglou a lot to see those players not really giving the same level that he demands of his squad in this match. An interesting stat that I'd seen from Sky Sports Stato was that this is the first time Celtic have trailed by two or more goals at halftime in an SPFL match since December 2017, which was the game where they lost 4-0 at Tynecastle. Or is that just, wow. That was an astonishing statistic.
Yeah. The one thing, just to end this chat about Celtic and Rangers, is the fact that I don't think there can be a marker for Rangers in this game, because I don't think this is a Rangers team which is going to look the same anyway next season. We know that this is the end of this cycle for a lot of this squad, and albeit, you know, special mention for McCrory in goal. I thought he was excellent.
Yeah, I don't think McCrory's done his chances any harm. That's his fourth start for Rangers. And a second Old Firm clean sheet. So probably Rangers' greatest ever goalkeeper. But he, Rangers have been really heavily linked with Jack Butland this summer. I'd be surprised if he didn't come in, actually, to be honest. I think Rangers are angling to get that deal done fairly soon. But I think if it's between him and McCrory next season, vying for that number one jersey, McCrory has done his chances absolutely no harm at all with his performance, I think, in that game. He had a great save from Matt O'Reilly. And just the difference it makes with a goalkeeper that comes off his line is astonishing. But he had a terrific game.
I wish he stayed on loan at Queen's for a little bit longer. But for the whole, this Rangers team is going to be very, very different next season. So
exactly.
Whatever happened in this game doesn't really matter. But it did matter between the Hearts and St Mirren, because St Mirren were chasing a European place. But it looks like they might miss out this season. Ended 2-2 with Hearts at St Mirren Park. Peter Haring got sent off for a red card, which I don't think is a red card. I think it's a yellow card. And then there was a penalty. Josh Cinelli won a penalty. So I'm thinking, it's not a penalty. When I say some people are thinking it's not a penalty, Robinson superfan Laura Brannan thought it was never a penalty and was quite vociferous in her opposition of it. But it's a penalty. I'm saying it's a penalty.
Bobby Madden was on Sportsound saying that he felt it was too soft to be a penalty, which surprised me. Like, as soon as I saw it, I thought, no problem with that pen.
Thing is, it's soft, but it's a penalty. Like, you can say, soft is not an argument to say you can't give it.
It's careless and clumsy at a critical time in the game.
Yeah. Was it the sixth minute of injury time as well? Like, an absolute stinker. obviously, Hibs drew 0-0 with Aberdeen as well, which would have set up the perfect run-in for the final day. Motherwell secured safety, though, on the weekend. A 2-0 win away to St Johnstone. And also Kevin Van Veen in this game. Good stat. Became the first Motherwell player in 86 years to score in 8 consecutive games. Wow. The bottom end of the table. It is quite exciting. Dundee United lost 3-1 to Ross County. I mean, County have been... I've always thought County would be fine this season, and they are where they are for a reason. But they did beat Dundee United at the weekend, who had been on a run of 3 wins in a row. Now they've got back-to-back defeats, and they're back to the bottom of the table. So they have to beat Livingston this weekend, in fact, to even have a sniff of avoiding maybe the relegation playoffs. But it's like a 5-goal swing, I think, to even get above Kilmarnock and stuff like that. It's just wild down there, Andy. Do you know who your tip might be to go down?
Well, a few weeks ago I said United would be safe, so I'm not sure.
Oh dear.
I'm not sure whether to stick with that or not. I feared for County, and I've been surprised by their last two wins, because they've been quite comprehensive, really. They were comfortable against United for the most part. Good striking play from Jordan White for the goals. And the week before as well, it was Livy, I think, up at in Dingwall. So,
that's right.
Yeah.
I found it quite surprising with Dundee United having lost their last two games, because I think, you know, you kind of waited all season for them to find that spark and to kick into gear. And you saw what it meant to the players a number of weeks ago when they managed to get that elusive win a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, the players were collapsing to their knees at the final whistle and they were just elated. And then, you know, they take that form into the games behind. And we were talking last week on the show when we were doing a roundup of the playoffs about how important momentum is going into these games at this stage of the season. And I felt that Dundee United had built up that head of steam, so I was really surprised by that result at the weekend and performance. But you have to keep going right to the end. You have to keep doing the biz right to the end. And it's interesting because you picked up on a number of months ago, and Andrew, about the fact that you felt like Malky Mackay just felt like quite self-confident and assured, and he's just like, we just kind of feel we're doing all the right things. The luck hasn't gone our way, but it'll come good in the end. And I think that seems to be filtering through to the county players as well. They look like they were the ones that would just be like, nah, we got this. Like, we're going to be safe. So, it's brilliant because it all goes down. There's still so much going live into the final game of the season again. And just another brilliant advert as well for the split. I know we were talking about it the other week and building it up. It's brilliant because all of these games have such massive significance and importance, and you're playing against the teams that you're in that neck of the woods in terms of the league, scrapping for every point and victory. So it's just such a terrific end to the season. Not if you're a Dundee United fan.
yeah. Well, Dundee United play Livingston, Ross County will play Motherwell, and Kilmarnock will host St Johnstone. And if you look down at the playoffs that are going on lower down, so in the Championship, Ayr will play Partick Thistle before the eventual promotion playoff / relegation playoff, however you want to name it. It's, you look at Partick Thistle and the way that they utterly dismantled Queen's Park in that second leg. It's one of those where I know Ayr have had a fantastic season, but momentum is massive in these sort of occasions, Andy. I just wonder if Ayr can hold Partick off.
Ayr are a good side, so yeah, very, very possibly. I wouldn't bet against it. They've got the player of the year as well in their ranks.
Yeah. I just wonder though with that win for Partick Thistle, and obviously under the cloud of Chris Doolan's dad passing away. Amazing that Doolan still took the team and everything like that. Like, that is so, that just shows the the measure of the man. And he's definitely loved by his players. I'm gonna stick with Partick as my team that will go through. But we should look at Hamilton as well, guys, because what a turnaround this was for them. They will play Airdrie because they beat Alloa 5-3 on aggregate, but with an hour left to play in the tie, they were 3-0 down on aggregate.
Yeah, I would like to get inside the head of George Stanger, who was sent off for Alloa, which maybe paved the way for such a comeback. But it was a really rapid turnaround, because I think it was only a couple of minutes into the second half that Hamilton scored their fourth. So it went from 0 to 60 rapidly. And I think that just must have knocked the complete stuffing out of Alloa, who are in a, like, quite clearly, they had the tie with the scruff of the neck about 15 minutes before that.
And then it's now a battle of the plastic fantastics, the Hamilton-Airdrie. I don't really know how you can call that one at all.
It'll be a really interesting tie, that one, because Airdrie absolutely battered Falkirk. Goodness me. Yeah. I think it was 7-2 on aggregate across the games. It was only 1-0 in the second leg, but 7-2 on aggregate, goodness me. So, Battle of the Plastic Fantastics, I think it'll be a really interesting match.
In the League Two playoffs, Annan couldn't get anything in the second leg against Dumbarton, but still went through 6-0 on aggregate. So that was fine that they couldn't get the second half, or second tie anyway. They're going to play Clyde, who beat East Fife 2-1 on aggregate. Again, these games, when it's at this level, you just can't separate the sides. I don't know. The one thing is, with Tommy Goss in front for Annan, he's just been a machine this season.
Yeah.
And I would have said he narrowly missed out on player of the season for me. But I really like him as a striker because he scores goals and I like them. The Pyramid Playoff is concluded on Saturday. It's currently balanced 1-1 between Albion Rovers and Spartans. Good luck to both of those teams. What can I say? But that's it for another week. Just to remind you all, we have two special episodes looking at some very special moments in Scottish football history. It's been 40 years since Gothenburg, when Aberdeen sank Real Madrid under Sir Alex Ferguson. A special guest and broadcast legend, Richard Gordon, joined us for that one. And then we also have, fresh off the cutting room floor, an excellent chat with former Ibrox hero Kevin Thompson on 15 years since Rangers' run to the UEFA Cup final. And we also have another amazing run. We can't forget Celtic's one back in 2003, so stay tuned for that. But for now, thanks to Finn, thanks to Andy, lads. Have a good day, weekend. But until next time, go and listen to something else.